This is episode 1 Foxtrot of Free as in Freedom for the beginning of January 2012. Hi, I'm Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn.
This is Free as in Freedom.
And so we're here to talk to our three listeners.
We're here. For us, it's the night before New Year's Eve.
It's arbitrary. You realize that, right?
It puts me in a contemplative mood. I'm looking forward to 2012. I'm thinking back to things in 2011. It's an arbitrary time where we decide to denote the time, and you're looking at the microphone.
Just to make sure it was plugged in.
Okay.
I'm fastidiously, pointlessly worried about such things.
We already tested it.
But I'm certainly, I know we tested it, but I just wanted to make sure it was on, even though we just recorded something else and it was on. But what I don't care about is arbitrariness. The dates are arbitrary.
Well, what's not arbitrary is that I hope a lot of our listenership had a good time if they cared about the day. And I guess that by the time this is released, it's a memory, but Happy New Year.
I'll be working the whole time. Course, like I did.
You won't be working the whole time.
Almost. Some of our usual days. Usual. Maybe I'll do short little 8-hour days. Things are tough. We're gonna do that one again. It's tough to be in. It's hard.
I don't think I'm gonna work more than an hour or two.
That's good.
I mean, it is a Saturday.
That's true.
For starters.
I worked last weekend, which was 24th and 25th of December. Not that I celebrate any holidays around those time myself, but I still was a working, worked a half day on the 25th,
well,
full day on the 24th.
You celebrated a religious holiday by acting the part of a martyr.
Oh, jeez. No, it's not. Some of this is, and people will see this, probably about a week or two after they hear this, they'll be able to look on our website and our Conservancy's website, I should say, not Free as in Freedom's website, but where I work, the Software Freedom Conservancy. We'll have our fiscal 2010 audit up, and it'll be out. And I know I can just promise that because the filing deadline is January 15th, and we must make it. So it will be done by January 15th, and I'll have it up a couple days after, hopefully, on the website. So
that's great.
It's a lot of effort. First
audit.
Well, yeah, because in New York State, the rule is that there's a threshold of amount of revenue before you need a full audit, and we just met that for the first time in fiscal 2010, and we got two extensions from the IRS.
Right, there are different layers of, so if you're up to a certain amount, you don't have to do anything. If you, under New York, say you just have to file a report. If you are over a certain threshold, and I don't remember the numbers, you can do what they call a limited review, and where the auditors take a look at your books, it's a much more general, very lightweight review.
And we covered this a long time ago.
Oh, we
did. I think
on
the old show because remember we looked over Conservancy's 990 in 2009?
Oh, my gosh. I do remember
and
that.
And we did that. I think that was the old show. And we did that, and we also talked about the limited review process, because in fiscal 2009, I'm such a nonprofit walk there. I'm talking about the fiscal year of 2009.
Mm.
I got used to that when I worked for FSF, but I realized that the normal human beings, they're like, why is there a distinction between the calendar year and the fiscal year? Like, I can understand why people don't, and it has to do when your organization started. If your organization started in the middle of the year, well, your first year of operation was a different year. So.
Yep.
Wow, there's phones ringing. So sorry about that, folks. But there's nobody here in the place we're at. I'm at my coworking facility, which I've talked about.
Coworking.
Well, that's a Dilbert thing. So if you take coworking and you move the dash to a different place, you get coworking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I call it, the coworking facility. Which, you know, there's basically nobody around, but there's...
I know, which makes me feel festive.
But there was a phone ringing, and obviously there's nobody there to answer it, so I had to ring through to their voicemail, presumably. Anyway, so sorry about the phone ringing, but I've been putting a lot of hours in. This is our first audit, so we're learning how to do it, and I'd done them at FSF before, but FSF had a much bigger staff, so mm-hmm. mostly the financial controller, who at the time was there, was Peter Brown, did most of the work, who later became the executive director of FSF, so I only had to see sort of the final output and review it. Whereas this flight time,
we switched places because at SFLC, I was the one who ran the audit. And now that I'm no longer with, I ran the audit this time, but it'll be the last time that I do that since I'm no longer employed there.
Right. So I was used to watching other staffers deal with nonprofit audits. I knew they were very invasive and a lot of work because I watched it at FSF and I watched it at SFLC. This is the first time I've actually had to be effectively the primary on it. I am Tony Sebro, who's Conservancy's general counsel, who joined us back in September. I think I mentioned that on a previous podcast. And he and I have been working on getting it done, and it's a lot of work. But it's good to have done because they actually look at basically every transaction, every financial transaction you had in the
year.
Yeah,
there really is.
They literally look at every one.
I think it's really cool if New York State to require this, actually. I mean, GNOME doesn't have to do it because it's a California organization, but audits are really, they're cool.
Well, and charity, example, Charity Navigator, which is one of these sites like GuideStar, which rates charities, they give you a lot of points if you've been an audited organization. So optionally auditing is actually a good idea for charities. But the fact of the matter is nobody wants to do this when they don't have to.
No, it's better to not have to do it. And, you know, I mean, or rather it's a lot of effort. I like when we do it because at the end of the day, there's always things that are improved from it. You know, no matter how many years we did the audit at SFLC, and even though we were doing things the same, new sets of eyes and just reviewing every transaction, there was always something that came up that we could improve. And that was really great.
Yeah, well, and I'm glad to get it done too, because obviously we have Conservancy has an important obligation to its member projects to show that it's doing the right thing with their funds. And so I want to be able to show that to the member projects too, that we've done a good job. And so it's been worth going through, but it's been my entire life for the entire month of December.
It takes a long time. Audit. Yeah.
Every day there's a half day worth of action items on audit. And then I try to fit all the regular work in the other half of the day. So that's what I've been working on and will be working on. We're finishing up in these 2 weeks here as this podcast is coming out.
And my December was spent mostly on GNOME's accessibility. Well, actually it was split in a lot of ways, but one of the things I was really focused on was that we launched a fundraising campaign for accessibility at GNOME. So that's pretty exciting. And, you know, the tagline for our campaign is make 2012 the year of accessibility for GNOME. And I think that's something that's really important that GNOME's going to be focusing on, which is, you know, I think that the very fundamental idea of free software in a charitable nonprofit is points in this direction. And I think that that what's really awesome about the GNOME community is that they are always thinking in that direction, always embracing the public good of their software. And so what we're doing is just taking a whole new focus on accessibility. And there's a Hackfest in January and in Spain, and I'm just really excited about it. It's really cool.
So is it in Spain, the same place where Guadix is going to be, or somewhere else?
It is in the same place Guadix is going to be.
Yeah, I'm worried about that trip.
A Coruña?
It's hard to get to.
It's not hard to get to. It's not hard to get to, you know, once you're over, you know, once you're
in Spain. Yeah.
In Spain, or once you can, I think you can fly pretty direct, you know. I can't remember, but I think there's actually from like London, you can get a short hop.
But there's layovers involved. I don't like when there's layovers involved.
I would love when there are layovers involved. I especially try to schedule them so that there's more than just a couple of hours, you know, like so that there's like 4 hours or 5 hours, then you can go and have dinner somewhere that you might otherwise
you
get
and
to visit.
I are very different travelers, Karen. There's no question about that.
I'm really excited for this. We mentioned this on the show already, but I'm talking at LinuxConf Australia in a couple of weeks. Yeah. And it's going to be a lot of travel. It's like 38 hours. It's a lot of travel, but I'm so excited. And I was just looking at flights, and I think I can get a cheaper one by doing more of a layover in Sydney, and I was really excited about that.
So the difference between me and Karen with regard to travel is we both travel because we have to, but Karen also travels because she likes to.
Yes.
And I don't have the likes to part.
That's sad.
Well, it's fine. It's good to go to these. I like being at the conferences. I just don't like
I don't like anything else
about the travel. I like being at the conference while the conference is going on, but I hate being at the hotel afterwards.
I have been getting a little tired of, you know, so much travel.
Oh, do you know they're trying to recruit me to run a birds of a feather session on bed bugs at scale? Well, because
you should do that.
So I'm speaking at scale. I should let folks know, because there won't be another podcast for that. I will be speaking at Scale, which is the Southern California Linux Expo, in Los Angeles, California. And
what is that from?
I picked it up for Mystery Science Theater, but it's actually, I think it's a riff on people who do announcements from things like the Emmys or other, you know, here we are at the Emmys from beautiful Los Angeles, California. Maybe it's a Lawrence Welk thing, although Lawrence Welk was from like Minnesota. So
that forgot about sense. Lawrence Welk.
Yeah, it's on all the time on PBS. They just show old Lawrence Welk episodes over and over again. And our international listeners are like, who is Lawrence Welk? Anyway, we won't bother to explain it. You can search. It's probably on Wikipedia. So anyway, I'm going to be at Scale and speaking about GPL enforcement.
Cool.
One of my favorite topics. And I've noticed, I extensively search when I travel about bedbug reports online. And the hotel that's, I will warn you, if you're going to Scale, I do not recommend a hotel. If you want to know which hotel I'm recommending.
Is Scale, I'm actually going to be traveling during Scale back from LizCamp Australia, so I could attend.
It switches,
so it's no longer in the Westin.
That's correct. It's in a different hotel, which I don't remember the name of, and I don't want to call them out. But they do have, you can easily find online, they have bedbug reports against them. And actually, a lot of the hotels around the airport, Los Angeles airport area, which is where it is at, have bedbug reports against them on various bedbug websites. I did find the one hotel that has no bedbug reports against it. And I dutifully told the world that they should contact me if they want to know the bedbug-free hotel.
Which one is that?
I don't know if I want to say it.
I'm telling people to drive up the price?
I've already got my reservation booked. I thought that I shouldn't be saying one way or another. I said that the one that's in has bedbug reports against it. But there are lots of others that do. And there's the usual thing of the management disputing them and all this stuff. Management gets on these websites and disputes them now. Okay. I put a bedbug report against us.
Now, the truth is that a lot of people make false bedbug reports.
Yeah, but there were multiple ones.
If they have a bad experience in some other way, or if they're just in a bad mood and vindictive.
What person would do that? That's a hard thing.
There are bad people.
I mean, I'll give a bad review of a hotel, but I won't say what's not true.
Some people will just say it, and so, you know, just the fact that management is disputing them doesn't mean that there were bedbugs. Yeah.
True enough. Anyway, so this is not supposed to be a travelogue cast.
Sorry.
Anyway, they're trying to recruit. So one of the Scale organizers was trying to recruit me to have a Birds of a Feather organization, but I actually said it should be a Bugs of an Exoskeleton session. But either way, I don't think I want to do it. But I was going to teach, they wanted me to teach people how to search a room for bed bugs, which is not that hard. You can see tutorials online. It's not that hard.
You so. should post a video of you doing it.
No, I'm definitely not going to do that. That will not be done.
Because watching you do it, I feel like I know how to do
it. Yeah, it's very easy. It's very easy. But it's constant vigilance. I've never heard of someone ending up finding bed bugs or getting bed bugs who did a search. Like every time I hear a report of somebody getting bed bugs from a hotel, I say, did you search the hotel? And their answer is always no.
Okay.
I've never found anybody who actually did a search. Now, there was a guy who does a lot of these bedbug reports on bedbugregistry.com, and it's sad that I know these people on these forums, but he's actually an exterminator, and he'll always search a hotel when he goes, and he actually writes an extensive report of what he does, what he found, but he always searches first, so presumably he does not get them. He leaves the hotel immediately.
Right.
Like anybody would want to. So I'm not going to do that bugs of an exoskeleton / birds of a feather session, but I will be giving my GPL enforcement talk, which Augcast listeners have heard versions of before because we've used it as audio before. And after that, I'll be at FOSDEM.
As will
you. And at FOSDEM, we're co-chairing a dev room, they call them.
Yes.
And it's going to be, we talked about it, we announced it, and now the call for participation is closed by the time you're hearing this. But we'll hopefully, very soon to when this is coming out, it'll be announced what the session's going to be and who's going to be speaking, what panels are going to be, and so forth. It's hopefully going to be, it looks like it's going to be a really good high-level and in-depth policy and legal discussion about free software.
Which is great, because I think that, you know, there are a number of established forums for having those kinds of having discussions about legal issues in free software, but they're really varied. So there are some that are just so basic, and one of the things that I really liked about this dev room is that it the premise is that it's going to be more in depth. So any basic proposals will be rejected, which I think is really cool. I think basic talks are really important. I've given them a number of occasions. Both of us have. And I think they're really valuable, but often that tends to be the only legal talk, is like introduction to legal issues, FAQ, basics on trademarks, basics on patents, why you need to worry about patents, you know, all those things. And we still received some submissions like that, but really we were hoping that we could do a much more detailed place for discussion, or in-depth place for discussion, and more sophisticated. And the proposals really, you know, in large reflect that.
Yeah, we got a lot of the proposals we got. We'll have some hard decisions because they're much more. We've got a lot. We got a number of some of the usual suspects in some sense, but they really came up and gave us some proposals that are much more advanced than the usual, which I think that sort of shows that this was a need that needed to be filled. But whatever, and that goes to Tom Marble, is really the he's actually helping coordinate this dev room and the Java one that he always does. He does the free software Java dev room every year. Mm-hmm. But he and I were talking, and he actually came up with this idea, and I was like, well, I'm behind it, I'll do it. But he's doing most of the legwork and coordinating, and it's really appreciated that he's done all this work while he's trying to coordinate two different dev rooms.
Yeah.
So I pretty much decided that on site I will be the person, because I've done less work, and I don't really want to go to... I mean, I do want to go to other parts of FOSDEM, but I want
to be a main success. Yeah, there's a desktop dev room, so I'm...
Yeah, so I figured you'd have to spend your time with that. I mean, I could...
I don't have to, but I want to.
There will probably be dev rooms for various conservancy projects and so forth, but I'm going to be focusing as much as I can, at least on the Saturday, on this one, because that's when ours is on the Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you're right that it's very important that we begin more open dialogue about these policy questions. Certainly internally in the FSF, we talk as the board of directors of FSF, putting my FSF hat on, about these kinds of issues internally, to how FSF should set its policies, and that's discussion we can't just easily bring the public into.
Yep, and you know, I mean, I think that happens at other free software nonprofits too, to some extent. The Conservancy Board discusses these issues.
Creative Commons.
GNOME Board of Directors discusses these issues quite a lot. Obviously, SFLC is a place where a lot of this discussion
happens
too.
Well, that's often done.
But almost all of
these
discussions are behind closed doors.
Well, and even some of the would be, and I wrote about this in my blog when I put out there to encourage people to apply to the dev room, that there are a lot of places where there are supposedly open communities, but they're not really open. They're not easy to join. There are secret criteria for joining.
So are you going to say what, which ones these are, or
well,
are you going to dance around it?
Well, I'll give an example of one that's not. I mean, it's at least its criteria are public. The criterion is public. The Linux Foundation runs one, which is only for members, legal lawyers for members of the Linux Foundation. And you and I have spoken at that one.
What's amazing is that we've spoken on more than one occasion.
Did we do twice? I thought we did once.
You did twice.
I did once.
Yeah.
We did together once, and then you did with somebody else or alone later.
Boy, it was a long time ago.
And actually, Conservancy is coordinating doing another talk there about compliance. Denver Gingrich, who works part-time at Conservancy, is going to be giving a talk, a more technical talk about compliance at an upcoming one. But they're basically invited guests. The usual discussion...
It's not to say that's not worthwhile, or, you know, it's really...
But it's really
it's valuable to the members.
And it's really about Linux Foundation delivering value to the members. But then there's a lot of... This discussion's happening behind closed doors and only for Linux Foundation members. And then there's one run by the Free Software Foundation Europe that I'm not a big fan of. That's basically an invite-only mailing
list. Actually, a little bit unclear as to... I guess it is run by FSF Europe, isn't it?
They're cagey about that, and that's a frustration for me too. But that's a side issue.
I think that group runs itself in a lot of ways. And I was subscribed to this. So that's the...
Are you still there?
No, I'm not. No. But I actually am thinking I should resubscribe.
Maybe you can meet the criteria. I was told the criteria are secret.
Well, I met the criteria before.
I guess.
Well,
they were secret, so maybe you don't meet them anymore. You won't know why. They're secret criteria. I was told they're secret criteria, which I don't meet, and I don't know why. I'm not tall enough to ride that ride, whatever it is.
Yeah, and it's you know, I guess this is basically the issue, is that then it's the criteria is up to... you know, someone to decide, and it's not an open discussion for everyone. Now, I think some of the reasons why these lists aren't just public and open is because, especially legalists, where you have lawyers talking, there's some argument that, or people believe that lawyers will be less likely to be chatty about these issues if it's open to the public and reproducible, at which point they often invoke things like the Chatham House rules.
Well, I'm totally against the Chatham House rules. And the main
let's explain what the Chatham House rules are.
If you can explain them, please do, because I've read the Chatham House rules multiple times, and I think there's a lot of weirdness on the edges that, I mean, so you can say what they are just generally. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I want to say what most people interpret Chatham House rules to mean rather than what they actually mean. But Chatham House rules are basically saying that you won't directly quote anything in the session. You aren't broadcasting the things that are said in that forum.
That's not actually what they say. They say you can broadcast things, but you cannot attribute.
Well, I know, but what I'm saying is like what. I mean, what I'm saying is what people mean.
Right.
When they say that.
So Chatham House rules allow you to do things like you're allowed to say. A lawyer for a large industrial computer maker, right? With more than N employees. So you can narrow it down to IBM and HP or something like that.
Yeah, or a lawyer for a free software related trade association.
Right. Or a free software 501c3, right? And narrow it down. A staff lawyer, right? Which narrows it down to like four people for 501c3.
Yeah.
Free software related is like four people in the world who are that. And so I think it's silly, and my main problem with Chatham House rules in the free software world is actually a different problem than this silliness. My main problem is that I interact with a lot of these. I've been on lists the Floss Foundation's list, which you and I are both members of, which has a pretty open membership policy. You can join, basically, you just have to ask to join and you can join. That's pretty much the rule. They basically try to keep, I think the only people who aren't allowed are actual people who have no other affiliation to free software other than being a journalist. That's pretty, because there was journalists who quoted messages off. And the only rule is do not literally forward messages off this list to public fora. And so that's reasonable to me because I can say, Simon Phipps said this on the Floss Foundation's list, right? And there's no rule against saying that. And I just can't forward.
Now, for me, knowing that I'm talking to a large group of people, regardless of what the rules are, I'm always worried about. Right. This is part of the reason why I'm not as active on lists as maybe I should be. Is that I always get really nervous. And it.
I mean, I see Floss Foundation as a public forum that's well moderated. I mean, it's really what it is. And sometimes the threads get out of control, like they do on any mailing list, but it doesn't happen that often. And these other lists, I think that this problem is. So here's the problem. If I were to join this FT, what's it called? FTFE Legal is what the list is called. It's ostensibly European, but there's lots of non-Europeans on it, so I don't really understand.
Yeah.
Like there's Brazilians on it, and.
And plenty of Asia-based.
It's very weird. Anyway, because it was supposed to be ostensibly confined to Europe, which actually the one time I was told the reason was because I wasn't in Europe, but then I found out non-Europeans were on, and then they changed the criteria.
I was told that initially too. I was refused initially, but I wound up being.
I sorry, I just faced
being ultimately accepted,
noise.
And then but actually, so what I did want to say is that so I did attend there was an event in Amsterdam that happened.
That's an invite only event.
It's an invite only event, and I did go to that once, and it was great discussion. Like, it really was an interesting forum, but it's not open to everybody. It happens behind closed doors,
and these Chatham House rules, which I want to get to the
point.
And
so none of the talks would be recorded. You couldn't see them if you weren't there. And the problem with the Chatham House rules is that if you're talking to a lot of the same people about the same issues, then you can't remember whether or not you can quote them.
that's exactly right. And that's actually the point I wanted to get to. That's because I interact. So there's a huge overlap between, for example, Floss Foundations in this list. And any legal and policy discussion list, there would always be a huge overlap with, say, Floss Foundations and other fora where we're all talking to each other. And this is a really small community. It's amazingly small. The things have happened in the recent weeks that remind me just how incredibly small this is, that there's like so few people in the end in this community. And so I'm talking to these people in all sorts of different ways and in lots of public fora. And it's very difficult. I basically tell people that unless you swear me to secrecy about something that I'm not going to don't assume I'm going to keep it a secret. Because unless you go through the trouble to say, this thing I'm about to tell you, this one thing I really don't want you to tell anybody. Like, I tell people, everybody I interact with, I tell them that. And so to have to be on sort of a list where things are flying by, multiple emails a day, and have to be like, did they say it on that list, or did they say it in this other place? And now I have to go search my email archives to figure out if I can say that. And what if I screw up? I've suddenly violated rules. And I take rules like that very seriously.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in violation of any license. The fact of the matter is, and I've said this now publicly, that even if I, at this point, I mean, I've been refused to join, like I've been denied membership in FTFE legal many, many times, over the last few years. And at this point, now that I've learned that the Chatham House rules are heavily enforced and required on that list, I pretty much would not be able to accept a membership because I couldn't agree to those rules anyway. With that group of people. So I probably wouldn't be able to join anyway. So
it's really tough. I mean, my personal view is that my approach to these issues is that I need to be really careful about what I say in any of these forums anyway, because if you say something to a room full of, you know, if there are 80 people there, or if you forward to a list and you don't even know, you know, who's on the list or what they're going to, you have to basically assume. It's not like a confidential discussion amongst three people. You have to basically assume that people will be talking about what you've said, or it's going to get forwarded in some way, shape, or form. Now, I don't want to be responsible for doing that, and that's what makes it so frustrating about the Chatham House rules, as you say. But at the same time, you know, when I see others violating it and people getting very upset over it, in the end of the day, I'm sort of like, well, you know, in some ways, you should be careful what you say anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think people in these Chatham House discussion groups ought to assume it's public, because I'm pretty much the Kaibo of these things, because if I'm mentioned, I find out I was mentioned. Somebody leaks it. And that's a fact of the matter. Anytime something about me has come up, which they do often, obviously I'm working around this world a lot, somebody leaks it to me somehow. So
I mean, that usually is the case for me.
I
don't know if they always tell me. People always tell me when I'm being discussed, but sometimes they do.
I hope that I'm not being discussed that much. That I'm leaked stuff on a regular basis, and you know what I'm saying.
It's you never know.
It's like they have to be talking about me all the time, which I'm not narcissistic enough to believe that they're constantly talking about me. Are they? I just think that for free software community, I've criticized this publicly at talks about this forum, and actually I went to a promotional talk about this forum, and I talked publicly about this, that I basically don't think it's in the spirit of free software to design groups like this.
You know, I'm mixed feelings about it. Like, I think there are some things that if you want to talk candidly about it, particularly legal issues, it's tough knowing that there's going to be an archive. So, you know, I understand that there are times, especially as a lawyer, I understand there are times when there are maybe issues you don't want to discuss. I mean, it just means that I would probably just not have a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, or just have them. Actually, when I compare it to what the Linux Foundation does, the Linux Foundation at least has a clear thing in what it is for, and it's for their members, and their members pay to be there. And, you know, it's sort of akin to a social club of some sort that you have to join. You know, it's not as, and so they have rules or whatever, but I think something that puts itself out to be, we are free software people and you can get access to this resource if you meet our criteria, which we won't tell you what they are. I think it's contradictory. Linux Foundation, I think at least, I'm not a fan of that, of any of this, but I think the Linux Foundation is straight up about what they have and what they're offering.
Well,
whereas I don't think it's less straight up.
So my point is really just that the FTF legal list has really, really good conversations, at least in person at that meeting. Hmm. You know, and we don't really, there isn't really, well, that's my point. And so that's part of why this, you know, FOSDEM dev room is so cool. Yeah. There have been arenas in the past where we've done similar things. I think the Floss Foundation's meeting has been one of those areas, but it hasn't been as legally focused, nor has it gathered, you know, lawyers or people who have legal expertise who are going to be speaking specifically about issues. You don't get presentations and in the same way, and then you don't have those presentations be reproducible. You know, so I think this is what's going to be really cool about the FOSDEM dev room. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. And my goal in this is try to really jumpstart real conversations about these issues in a forum that's basically free software friendly. And so it was the first try. We're going to, we've been watching the proposals come in. I think pretty much everybody's agreed to CC by SA on the way in.
Yep.
So we'll be able to record a lot of them. I'm going to bring the equipment. And actually it's not very long, so I'll have room in my suitcase for the equipment, which is good. So I'll bring the recording equipment and hopefully we'll record a lot of these talks and be able to.
That's great. We
play
should
them
also
as podcasts, which, okay, so get ready, folks. In March and April, a lot of our shows are going to be talks. Just prepare yourselves now.
Maybe.
Those of you who rather hear us, there will probably be a lot of talks March, April, and May.
But there'll be talks from interesting people who have really, you know, interesting, in-depth, you know, analysis of important issues. You're probably bored of listening to us.
Who are these people that would rather hear us? That's what I don't understand. Like, I've heard that from a few people in Identica and other places, and why do they want to hear us? I mean, you've just listened. You're now at the end of an Augcast where you've heard us what sounds like when we just ramble on about a couple of topics. Is really what you want? Those three of our listeners out there.
Don't discourage our listeners.
All three of them?
Somebody just said that to me the other day. Yesterday.
Yeah.
Referred to it as a ridiculous podcast with about three listeners.
Yeah, you told me. And that is, So that's pretty much the most
I corrected him with some of the stats, which are old, but...
Well, we can't... On the other hand, we can't prove... Theoretically, I mean, we have a couple of thousand unique IPs that download each audio file. But for all we know, that's like the four listeners who hang out on IRC, they may go around and use multiple IP numbers to download
But we do get responses once in a while on different things that we've said. And, you know, I know, for example... Adam Dingle at Yorba said he got some good feedback on the on the episode that I interviewed him.
So, on the other hand, we promoted that one in a lot of different places.
That's true.
I posted that to Floss Foundations and stuff. So cool. We sort of pushed that one out a little bit further than we usually push.
It was great to talk to him about that.
Yeah, well, I think it was a really important episode. So.
I just wanted to, before we like completely leave the discussion on these legal foras for conversation, I did want to mention Open Bar.
Well, yeah, I'm on Open Bar, but it's defunct.
I was on Open Bar.
It's defunct. Nobody's posting to it anymore. I presume you could write a message to it and it's still there. I wonder if it's still even live.
But it might be worth, resuscitating it.
Yeah, there's been some talk about that. It's actually hard to find now.
Because the term Open Bar means something else. It does mean what a lot of people have in mind concerning New Year's.
Yeah, it's true. Good point. I'm trying to find the mailing list. It's not helping. I'd have to look. I'm pretty sure I'm still subscribed. I think it's just defunct. I had some, maybe this is why I'm not welcome on FTF Legal, because one lawyer posted once saying that clearly binaries were not derivative of sources because the word compilation is used in the copyright statute, and since you do a process of compilation to turn source into binaries, they must be a compilation under copyright law, just because the words were the same.
I remember.
I don't know whether this dude was trolling or was serious, but...
I bet he was serious.
I took it serious and I responded.
Yeah.
I was pretty, I was like, this, maybe I was too, this is asinine in my response, but it kind of was asinine.
I thought it was a little harsh, as I recall. But
my response?
Yeah.
Probably. I'm known for being... I think I said in a recent email, actually, in our discussion among our coordinators for the dev room, I believe I wrote a one-line email that said, I'm not known for my tact. Which is very true. I am not known for my tact.
You could just write emails like me and add a lot of exclamation points.
Yeah, although... I don't know if I want to tell the story of the first email I got from you on the air. Should I tell
You can. You completely misunderstood what I was saying.
I know I did, because it was because of the exclamation points, though. You were way over the top of it.
You're shaking my head.
You're way over top of the exclamation points, though. Sometimes.
I'm enthusiastic.
But that's the thing, is if somebody hasn't met you in person, they don't realize that. I think now I don't read them that way because I know you in person, but somebody, that's the thing. That's why email
is. But I never used any emoticons then. Only now do I use them.
I use those.
I know.
Excessively. So this is let's do a quick rant here. Email is horrible. Email is the worst form of communication ever invented for a lot of reasons.
Seconded.
The problem is that there's this belief that it's easier to do conversations by email. That's absolutely false.
Mm-hmm.
And way too many conversations of free software happen via email. And I think publicly archived things of other forms like IRC meetings or video chats, we can start publicly archiving video chats. I mean, the main value in email is the discussion is publicly archived, but and which is good for transparency. But the problem is people communicate very poorly with each other in email and misunderstand each other and misconstrue. And I've made my life's work in part to try and communicate better in email because obviously in the free software world, I'm doing so much by email. And I've actually focused on that issue for years. Well, this and I'm is still why, horrible at it.
This is why I use emoticons now. It took me years to be break down. I thought I really hated them and refused to use them for many, many years.
Yeah.
And then I started using them and I told somebody else that I was, I told Eben Muglin that I was trying to cut back on my emoticons and he said the day you lose your exclamation point will be an interesting one. Is to him the exclamation point is another, is basically effectively does this. I mean, it does the same job. Anyway.
Well, the problem with the exclamation point is it's you're either shouting or you're excited, and it's hard to tell which. I don't know.
Well, you're not really shouting unless you've got all caps.
This is yeah, that's true. But this is all broken. We have to start
anyway,
communicating.
Anyway, to
all
go
time
back to FOSDEM, I'm really really excited about the cross. Desktop DevRoom 2. I think the more areas we can have discussion on cross desktop issues, the better it's going to be.
I haven't looked at any of the other FOSDEM program, and it's probably the case that there are other conservancy projects there that I'm going to have to meet with. But if you're a conservancy project and you're a FOSDEM, plan to meet with me and talk to me on Sunday, because I really do want to take this seriously, because mainly for Tom, because Tom's been carrying so much of the weight of coordinating.
Yeah,
this
he
DevRoom
has.
And so
he's been great.
So I don't want to leave him because he's got two to coordinate on site. So mm-hmm. I don't know if the job room's the same day though. But anyway, he's going to be busier on site than we are.
But there are four of us, so we should be able to.
I'm already planning that I'll just be in that dev room all day.
Okay,
and just miss. I'll miss a lot of stuff, but that's okay.
I'm hoping to moderate a panel.
So, in the other dev room, in the desktop dev room.
No, in our dev room.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, we haven't decided yet, so that'll be announced soon. So I hope folks have enjoyed our conversation. I
hope you had a great New Year's celebration.
Yeah.
If you were so inclined.
Okay.
See you next time.
You're not gonna see us.
Free as in Freedom is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. Free as in Freedom is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 United States license. Please send any feedback to oggcast@faif.us and subscribe to the RSS feed on faif.us.